And welcome back to Blue Sierra's Telehealth Radio. Thanks so much for listening today. We've had some great interviews and we have two more folks to talk to. I'm so excited to have two of our team members from Blue Sierra's, Cynthia Schneideman-Miller and Debbie Voiles, who are both here to talk to us about rural health and the things that they have learned in their travels and their work and the things that they do on a day-to-day basis. So Debbie and Cynthia, welcome to the show.
Yeah, glad to be here.
Glad to be here.
Thanks so much for being here. So a couple things I wanted to ask you. You know, we talked with Alan Morgan and with Beth about the provider access and the challenges with rural health. And what are you seeing in the work that you're doing, the pressures that you've seen for rural health organizations in general? And Debbie, I'll start with you and then Cynthia, you can follow up.
Yes, recruitment into rural communities is still a challenge. It's probably even a bigger challenge today than it has been in the past because the number of healthcare providers is declining. And so we're running into staffing, not just from a clinical standpoint, but also from the front desk staffing. So it goes all the way down from the providers down to the clinical staff that's helping support them. It's just a challenge right now to get healthcare in rural communities right now that we're seeing.
Interesting thought. Anything to add to that, Cynthia, or a different challenge that you've seen?
I think one thing when we talk about rural, we have to remember that one rural community is different from another rural community. And so sometimes, we generalize more than we should, but as Debbie mentioned, staffing is definitely one of them. I think one of the things that we have also seen is that I say there's a slower pace in rural communities, and part of that is adoption of new ideas, new technology. It's not that they don't want to. I think part of it is they don't always have the infrastructure for it, and part of the time they don't have the time to learn new things or go out and do the research or whatever. So that's some of the challenges. Another thing that I think that is different than, say, urban areas that is a big deal is transportation. The urban areas are more likely to have public transportation or to have someone that can take them, a neighbor or someone. But in our more rural areas, that is not an option. And even the local transport systems are overworked and they quit when it's time to quit. And so patients sometimes are left at a disadvantage. So those are some of the pressures that I think, again, vary a lot by community, but as a general pressure, those are all things that the, no-shows because of transportation, no time because they're just, some of these people are literally running down the halls from room to room to room to try to get everybody seen. So those are some more of the pressures that I'm seeing.
Yeah, really good point. I think that not only are those rural providers caring for the entire community versus an urban area might just have a piece of a population, which have such an impact, but it's a really good point that rural areas and urban areas are different. And I want you to expand about that in general as well, because not only is there a technology challenge, and we know that, technology and broadband access is being addressed at least somewhat in this infrastructure package that we have from the federal government. But we haven't even gone as far as I think all of us who live in this industry every day would like to do, which is let's make this a utility. Really, people should have access to broadband in order to live in the same way that they do lights and heat and air conditioning and things like that. And certainly in the South for air conditioning, and maybe everywhere now because we've had such a heat wave. But when we think about rural versus urban and how unique each rural community is, my first thought goes to some are agriculture, some are not. But tell me what your thoughts are in that space and what are the not only technology challenges, but some of the other things that you see that could hinder telehealth adoption. And I'll start with you, Cynthia.
Well, it's not a secret that agricultural areas tend to have lower incomes generally. You know, they don't have as high paying jobs, and there's a lot of accidents that occur in this industry. I also have seen fewer are tech savvy, partly because the infrastructure may not be to that last mile. You know, it's great to have the interstate, but it's that dirt road off of that interstate that can be the hindrance. Also, the pace is different. And people don't always understand that. If your culture is to watch crops grow, you have this sort of you don't have to have things as quickly. You learn to do without things happening as quickly. You know, if you're hurt, you want to be helped, but you're more patient, I think, more temperate about it. And so that's a couple things that I've been seeing.
Good point.
Debbie, what did you add to that?
Yeah, Debbie.
Well, I think about conversations in the past, you know, especially about the agriculture stuff that you talked about. You've got a farmer who has to put a crop in or has to get a crop out. He may delay care if he has to travel any distance to get that healthcare service. I remember years ago, we had a farmer who went to his local clinic that was run by a nurse practitioner. And she said, hey, you've got a spot. I think you need to go into the dermatologist and get it looked at. And it was a 4-hour round trip drive. And he says, I can't take a half a day off to go into the doctor to get seen. I'll do that when the crop comes out. And several months later, what could have been managed easily turned into a stage 4 melanoma. And so now it's a lot more serious, a lot more aggressive from that standpoint. And it was the, I don't have the time, kind of like you were talking about. I've got to take care of my crops. I've got to take care of my family. And I don't have the means to take hours on end to go into a larger community to get access to some of that care that they couldn't get in the local community. So those are some of the challenges that I've seen over the years with rural. I always used to say, you know, one of the things we need to think about in trying to help our rural communities is if you like the food you eat, the clothes you wear, the cars you drive, you need to start taking better care of rural community, because that's the food, fuel and fiber comes from those rural communities. And we need to be doing a better job across the board to get them what they need, or we're all going to be struggling.
I've heard you say that before, Debbie. So that is not the first time you've said that, for sure. And I know it's part of your ether, you're part of your ethos that you live by as well. And as you work with folks in these rural areas, and I think you both make a really good point, not only in the agricultural areas, but those that live in rural, just because they enjoy working in a rural space. This also applies in terms of, you know, the pace of life. That's part of the appeal for folks that live in rural areas. And your zip code shouldn't determine whether or not, as we talk about many times, whether or not you get good health care. So accessing care via technology can be a really big assistance to these areas that, you know, as you said, driving may be difficult, or they just might not be able to do it because they've got, you know, kids that they're taking care of, and they've got a you know, can't schlep them all the way to the doctor at whatever visit, or one kid's sick and now all three kids are sick, or, you know, certainly I've seen that in my own family. So I understand. One thing that we've talked about on this show many times is around the technology challenges. And I wanted to point out, because you mentioned this dirt road from the interstate, I think it's important for people to know that broadband and high-speed internet access, I think both those of us that live in urban areas, we take for granted that everyone could potentially have access to that. And cell phone service that's at the highest speeds at 5G or whatever, that isn't the case. Even though those maps from the cellular service providers and the broadband providers show that everything is perfect, and they are covering the United States completely, that's actually not the case. And many of these folks, if you have friends or family in those areas, you can easily attest to that. When you try to call them, they may have to stand in a certain room of their house or not be in the house at all, and those types of things. So this is a real challenge for those rural areas. And the cost of implementing that technology is so high, the companies don't necessarily want to do, as you referenced, Cynthia, that last mile. So actually the federal government very often is subsidizing getting that last mile in. So, you know, it's important, and that makes it slow because you've got, you know, subsidized funding and you've got customers that are waiting in urban areas. So what are you, where are you going to go, right? You're looking for, you're going to go to your urban areas. So they'll prioritize urban versus rural. So another way that urban areas are kind of shortchanged in that way. But let's talk a little bit about something that I know is passionate for both of you, and that's public policy and how that can change and address and move healthcare and telehealth adoption as well. We just had the physician fee schedule, proposed fee schedule, come out. There have been some positives in there, I think, but we have to do some fine reading because that just came out. Tell our listeners a little bit about how they can help and how legislation can really guide or channel telehealth adoption in a variety of different ways and how it affects it overall. And Debbie, I'll start with you.
Well, you know, we've come a long way since, you know, we first started with telemedicine as far as reimbursement. I will hands down give you that. I think the pandemic brought a lot of things out to a lot of individuals that said, hey, we can do this through technology. Let's reimburse for it. So I applaud everybody that has worked on it to that extent. We do have limitations, though, especially in the rural communities. We're asking them to set up rural health clinics with technology for telehealth, but they can get a facility fee to help offset the cost. And Medicare, Medicaid pays about $28 and change. That doesn't cover the cost of the broadband and the equipment that they need to put in those facilities, plus the time that it's taking for the staff to be able to present those patients to a specialist that's not in the community. And so I think that there could be better implementation on and looking at how do we help these rural communities better pay for the services to keep people local, to keep them in access to the same quality of care that they could get, level of care, if they were in that urban setting. So I do think that that's one of the things. And then being able to let a physician decide, can I do this via tele or not? Put it in their capable hands instead of dictating what CPT codes that they can allow to do. And can it only be audio, video, or can it just be audio in some cases? So we really need to look in and rely on our clinicians to let them know what we can and cannot do and take the feed from them, as opposed to having somebody else dictate what we can and how we can do it.
That's a good point. Cynthia, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think very much I agree with Debbie that we need to look at telehealth not as a new service, but as a mode of delivery. And again, just as a doctor would decide if they can take care of the patient if they come into the clinic, then they can decide if that's something they can do remotely themselves. And I think a lot of things would not have to be legislated if that was the approach we thought, but it wasn't. It's always been treated as this mysterious thing before the pandemic, he kept saying, there's this new thing called telemedicine. Well, it's been around decades. It's just that there hasn't been the utilization of it. And part of it is we still get back to there's no standard reimbursement across the board. And I just messed with it. I went to my PCP and said, oh, you know, does my telemedicine, you know, can you check, is my insurance cover a telehealth visit if I need it in the future? Oh, well, that's up to you to look. Well, if that's the response I'm getting, I know other people are as well. And so a lot of people, I think there would be a better adoption if they were sure it was going to be paid for, and more providers would use it if they were sure it was at the same rate as if they breathe the same air. And again, as Debbie said, let the provider make that call. Is there going to be a bad egg or two? Yes, there's going to be a bad egg if they walk into the clinic.
Yeah.
You know, so you can't base all your reimbursement on the and your legislation on the outliers. So that's one of the things that I would like to see is more just standardization, whether it's private or government payment or whatever. Let's treat it as the same as if they walked into the store.
I think that's a really good point at this idea of standardization and management, because you're right. There's so much variability in telehealth that actually becomes a barrier just because it's so much more complicated. Like, they know right away, what is it going to be? How do they code a visit, you know, low complexity, high complexity with a patient? They've got that at the tip of their tongue. But we seem to be changing the telehealth rules all the time. And our listeners will, I think, have heard this on the show before. There's some arbitrary restrictions around rural organizations for geographics or site restrictions that come in. And thankfully, we have bipartisan support to change, but it's not changed fully yet. So we have, you know, still some work to do, although we think that will change. That is also something that's hard to build a business model off of when you know that the law might change in December. And you haven't been told, and certainly those that are paying attention to this in the rural area, they're just trying to take care of their patients, as you mentioned, Cynthia, just trying to go down the line and take care of folks. But putting some standardization, though, I kind of want to jump on this one a little bit, because I heard someone say recently, and I thought it was a really important point, that in fact, the companies that are providing care in telehealth, in other words, those that are more profiting from them, more for-profit companies providing telehealth. We don't have to necessarily name them, but we probably all could. Those that are providing care, some of them have partnered with insurance companies to provide care, that in fact, their advertisements that they do to patients in the country may in fact inadvertently be making patients believe that that is substandard care. In fact, it isn't. They're going to get the same care, but do we have to do some kind of public service announcement to show telehealth is health, as ATA says? And what are your thoughts on that? I'll start with you, Debbie.
Oh, I agree completely. I mean, the challenge is you have those companies that are the for-profit, especially those that are working with the payers that may not be providing the same quality of care, in my opinion. There's the continuity of care is not there because they're not working with their primary care provider. And in some cases, we're running into a situation in Wisconsin where a certain payer has said, we're not going to cover it unless you use our arbitrary company that we're working with, which is some of the things that we heard before the pandemic ever started. And, you know, that kind of went away during COVID, but now that's creeping back up where they're trying to dictate who their clients can use for telehealth services. And I think that goes back to your standardization, and we need to open this up and let the patients choose who they want to work with. If they already have a primary care provider, we should let them work with that primary care provider and not be dictated to from that standpoint. But, you know, again, telehealth is just a tool in the toolbox, like a stethoscope. It should not alter the healthcare. It's just changing the modality, like Cynthia had mentioned.
You're right. Cynthia, I know you have some thoughts on that too.
Mm-hmm. I think I like the idea of, could we do a public campaign, if you will, that this is good. But one group that I think we need to make sure is involved are our medical colleges, so that the providers in the rural areas feel supported, because this wasn't anything that was taught during med school, right? They train to the boards. They don't train for the extras that this has been. But even during COVID, now all of a sudden they're wanting to know, how can we train? Do we need to train? And a lot of providers residents are wanting to do this. So that's a big group I think we need to get involved, so that they don't just feel it's a government trying to push something more on us. I think they need to understand that it's really a beneficial option. And again, you know, help train them. Training is one thing that is needed, I think, on many levels. The patients need to know how to use the equipment. The providers need to know what is appropriate, what isn't, how to conduct a good telehealth visit. I think the specialists need to know when is it appropriate, when is it not. Some, like, I won't mention them, but there's a couple really fine telehealth programs in universities, and they take training very seriously. And it's just such a difference from their graduates from the ones that come from other areas and other universities on acceptance and utilization once they get out in the work field.
Yep, absolutely. Including it into their residencies and internships and things like that. So important. Well, I know that the three of us can put the world to right if we just spent another hour talking about this topic and they listen to us, right? And we'd also be able to probably solve world peace at the same time. But I appreciate your time and your expertise. And thank you so much for sharing your experience around rural communities. It's so important. And combined with your expertise, Alan Morgan, our earlier interview, and Beth O'Connor, all of you doing such great work and helping folks in those rural spaces get better care and better access to care. And again, not having zip code guide their access to that care. So thank you so much for being on the show tonight.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for listening to the show. This is WATD Blue Cirrus Radio. We are the smartest show on radio.